Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, June 25th. Which country has the world's best health care? That straightforward question is the title of a new book by Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, an architect of Obamacare. The Affordable Care Act, of course, is Obamacare, and he's a frequent commentator on the coronavirus pandemic as well. Ezekiel Emanuel is an oncologist, bioethicist, and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He's vice provost for global initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania and chair of the Department of Medical Ethics and Health Policy there. And he's offering health policy advice to the Biden campaign. And I think I'm leaving a few things out, but we'll talk health policy and health politics now, the dramatic new surge in virus cases around the country right now. And maybe we'll find out which country has the world's best health care per the title of the book. Dr. Emanuel, thanks for coming on this morning. Welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, Brian, it's great to be back on your show.
So which country has the world's best healthcare?
Oh, Brian, you're like my students at Wharton. You always want to know the answer without the hard work. But the hard work means you can retain it better and retain it for a long time. So one of the things we did, and I was skeptical of all rankings that said this is the best country, mostly because, you know, the WHO did a ranking, France and Italy came out number one and two. And in most other rankings, they don't come out in the top 10. So I didn't like that. We identified 22 separate metrics. And, you know, group countries about satisfying those metrics, you know, things like do you have to pay at the point of care when you go to the doctor or admitted to the hospital? Is there free choice of doctor and hospital? You can go to anyone you want. Are there waiting times? Are drug prices low? And depending upon who you are, you're going to have a different combination of these, which metric is really important to you. And so we, in the end, said that no country got an A. You know, you mentioned I'm a professor. I'd like to grade on the ABC scale. No country got an A, but there are four countries we identified in the sort of top tier. And, you know, I will tell you, we always get some pushback on it, but I think it's pretty good. Those four countries, drum roll please, Brian, are Norway, Netherlands, Germany, and Taiwan. And I would put a little asterisk at Taiwan. Taiwan has very high satisfaction of the people in the country. They have very low costs, but there are two defects that sort of make me hesitant about it, which is why I think it's a little bit of an asterisk. One, doctors are way overworked there, so they'll see 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 patients a day. So you're not going to get a lot of time with the doctor in Taiwan. And secondly, the hospitals are Spartan is one word I've heard used. Another word is that they're kind of like undergraduate college dorm rooms, and you're expected to have your family come in and actually do a lot of taking care of you. So, you know, that's a difference. But even the countries we've identified, each of them have things that some people don't like. Like in Norway, there are waiting times. There is a big divide between primary care doctors in Norway and the Netherlands working as, you know, serious gatekeepers before you can get to specialists. So it really does depend upon which metric you think is really important.
Why not Canada?
Well, for one thing, and this may come as a big surprise to lots of our listeners, is drugs are not covered in Canada. Some provinces do have them covered. And again, actually Canada, we talk about it as if it were one system, but it's not one system. Each province is slightly different and importantly can be significantly different. It's more like Medicaid in the United States where you've got variation. There are sort of national principles and national funding to the provinces, but the provinces really define things. And turns out that drugs are not covered nationally, so people don't have payment, and what they end up with is, you know, a lot. If you're employed, often employers will provide drug benefit to their workers. Some provinces have drug benefits, but this isn't a standard practice in Canada. And I think a lot of the innovations that we really need to be seeing around things like chronic care management, mental health, we didn't think Canada excelled at those in the way some of the other countries did.
Maybe the headline from what you just said from, you know, the last couple of answers is no country gets an A. Is an A theoretically possible in the 21st century, given the cost of modern medicine and pharmaceuticals?
Well, you know, that's a very much more complicated question than it looks. Yes, I do think an A is possible. I would have said, you know, one of the things we did identify is every country is worried about costs, even ones that are spending 12% of GDP on healthcare. And boy, do we wish in America we could get down to 12% of GDP spent on healthcare, because then we would liberate more than $1 trillion a year to spend on other things, whether it's families having that money or investing in education or infrastructure or parental leave or whatever your top issues are. And believe me, I think society would be enormously better if we actually could get down to 12%.
But what's our percentage now? What's our percentage now?
We're just under 18%. And we, by the way, have been at the same level of GDP for more or less the last decade. Mm-hmm. Since passage of the ACA, that actually kept healthcare costs relatively flat. You know, we had been projected to go over 20%, and that 2 percentage point for those people who don't keep track, that's worth you know, somewhere in the range of $450 to $500 billion a year. So that's real money. The fact that we've actually been able to keep it under 20%, but all countries. Even countries, again, with lower drug prices than the United States, and that is every other country in the world, they worry about drug prices, and it's a big part of their spend, and they are very worried about that increase. So these are some of the common problems that we did identify. Other common problems are, you know, not great mental health care, long-term care. There are some common problems that I think stand in the way of any country at the moment getting a full unqualified A out of my class.
Rich in Garden City, Long Island. You're on WNYC with Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Brian. Dr. Emanuel, thanks so much for taking my call. First-time caller, but I love the conversation and I certainly enjoy the show.
Thank you.
To the point, New York City, and we started cleaning up the subway by using ultraviolet light. I'm a former New York City teacher, and I was wondering, both in air conditioning systems in the city, you know, offices and in the classrooms, wouldn't it be possible to put an ultraviolet light in the air conditioning ducts and or put like units, air blower systems, you know, like little boxes in the classroom with some kind of way to clean the air, scrub the air? I mean, using masks and all of that, but it would help scrub the air.
I don't know about UV light as the main mechanism, but HEPA filters would be beneficial. But that won't, it's interesting, you're still in an enclosed space, you're still got kids, and that doesn't solve certain problems. And we know this from other enclosed spaces that have really good filtration systems like airplanes, which is even with those, you know, people sneezing near you, you know, say they're a few feet away, some kid is walking by the back of your chair and sneezes in your direction. So these are some of the challenges that even adding some of these measures, and I do think HEPA filters are a very useful measure that we do know can make a difference, would be beneficial. But remember, you're going over the summer, we're going to be outside, and I would recommend the listeners, you know, if you're going to do things and you're going to do things with other people, do them outside, even with hotter temperatures, because dilution works. Stay 6 feet away, wear a mask, and outside is better than indoors. I am really worried, and I'll just be really blunt about it. We come to October, November, where we're moving indoors and we're closing windows because of the cold. That's when we're going to, you know, that's when second wave spikes. That's when flu goes up because of all these issues. We can reduce the risks. HEPA filters can reduce the risk. you know, cleaning doorknobs and cleaning desks in schools, wearing masks, all of that can help. But it will almost inevitably go up in a second wave.
Frida in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Ezekiel Emanuel. Hi, Frida.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me on. My question is about my mother, who's in her 70s and she lives in Chicago. She's been self-isolating since the beginning of this. And myself and my family, my husband and three children, really would like to see her. And she has been made by some of the doctors in our family pretty scared to come into contact with us unless we're social distancing, like in the backyard. It's just unrealistic for us to drive, you know, 14 or 15 hours and not be able to go into the house. My plan was that we would self-isolate for 14 days, all get tested, wait, completely quarantined for the 3 days it takes for our results, take our negatives, you know, print it out, get in the car, drive to Chicago, not stop along the way, bring our own food, pump gas with a glove, not use a public restroom, and then get there. But there's still some of the people in our family that feel there's still some risk. I should also footnote that I was positive in March. I was positive in March, so I feel like potentially I still have some immunity. My family was not tested positive, but I assume they all had it.
And I'm going to jump in for time, but you know, Dr. Emanuel, I know you know, that there are so many stories like this with people grappling with this, specifically with their older parents and other older loved ones. Does Frida's plan get the Ezekiel Emanuel seal of approval?
So, you know, we're having that dilemma. I have a daughter who's about to have a 30th birthday. And the question is, we're going up having, you know, is a picnic outdoor, socially distanced, don't go into the house kind of thing. You know, and I understand it. We're driving 8 hours to do that.
This is to protect you in the case of your family, right? Because you are the older person.
So they're worried about their kids. And one of my children is pregnant. And, you know, in general, people have different standards. So let me say the following. First of all, I do want to reemphasize, we have tried to create this this sort of map or risk index, I think is what we're calling it, so that you can see what the different activities and the risks are. And a lot of it depends upon how much risk you want to take and how much risk your mother is willing to take. And you know, different people have different risk tolerances. I tend to be on the high end of willing to take risks, and I'm still not willing to fly. I will say your plan, especially if you've, you know, if you had it and you know you had it, and other people likely had it because of symptoms, say loss of smell and things, testing for the antibodies with a reliable test, and many of those serology tests are not reliable, is a useful indicator. And by the way, if you've got high antibodies, I'm not 100% sure you need the 14-day quarantine, but you sound like you're going through almost everything you can do to make sure that you are not carrying the coronavirus to Chicago to see your mother. And I would go through and ask your relatives. I said, so where do you think we might pick up the virus that we would transport it to mom? We don't want to give mom COVID. And we're trying to be as safe as possible. And actually, I couldn't follow every one of the steps you're doing, but it does sound like you're taking almost every precaution that Zeke Emanuel can think of. And I think having that discussion, you know, part of the problem here is there are a lot of uncertainties. You know, what we're learning about this changes, and people, I think, are reacting, you know, from gut reactions. But it did sound to me like the list you gave was about everything you could possibly do to guarantee that you're in a bubble and you don't have COVID. You know, you're hanging around for 14 days in quarantine, not interacting with other people. That's pretty good, and you're going to drive all this time without availing yourselves of any public space where you might pick it up.
Exactly?
Pretty amazing.
So now you can play this tape for your mom, Frida, which is great.
that was my whole point.
I figured.
What I really wanted you to say,
so
doctor,
if something goes wrong,
is of course
Zeke
you can go. Yes, you, no.
So
what
it,
I want
if,
you
if
to
something
say
goes
is,
wrong.
Of course you can go under those circumstances.
So you know you're going to have to sign a waiver of liability now for Dr. Emanuel.
I also think that it does depend upon how much risk everyone.
Where's the risk, everyone?
Huh?
If my whole family's had it, we're not going to.
I'll tell you where the risk is. You happen to be staying in a hotel and you.
Drive straight.
I'm saying, but once you get to Chicago, you walk out on the street and someone sneezes near you. I mean, look, there are many cases we can't figure out where people contracted the virus. So, you know, I do think you're not getting risk to zero. Almost none of us are getting risk to zero, even if we quarantine for 14 days. You know, say you go out for a walk, you know, things can happen. Even if you've got a mask on and all of it, it reduces the risk. No guarantees it takes it to zero. But, you know, life is filled with risks. It's not like, you know, your mom is living a risk-free life. She might walk outside and Lord knows what might happen. She might drive her car or someone might drive her and Lord knows what might happen. So I like to put
risk
in context.
But I think she's legitimately under the impression that she should wait for a vaccination. When will that come?
I would fall 2021.
Really,
it's probably
that long?
The earliest stage, yeah. Likely. Well, just play it out, Brian. So we're going to start the effectiveness trials in July. We're going to have to enroll 30,000 people, give them a vaccine. They're going to have a situation where they need to be exposed to see if they're protected from the vaccine or if they get it, and. Then we have to look at the data and make sure that it's clean. Say it works. That's probably early 2021. Companies are going to be making the vaccine, so they're ready to ship. So they'll ship, and the first people who get it are healthcare workers, grocery workers, policemen, firemen, frontline people. By the time it gets down to average citizens like us, it's going to be Q3, you know, third quarter, fourth quarter, 2021.
All right.
I'm just being realistic.
So, yeah. Some people hope earlier, but we will see on that one. All right, Freddie, your mother's going to ask you, so I'll ask you, since you said it, you're going to drive 14 hours from here to Chicago without using a public restroom. How are you going to do that?
Do I have to say? I mean, I figure I've gone camping before. I could take a quick pee on the side of the road. I'm sure my kids could, right?
I'm sure your kids could.
I think we could work it out, is what I'm saying.
Frida, thank you very much. And I will acknowledge, Frida, that I know one other person who is planning a car trip, who is also a woman, who is planning to do the same thing. Frida, thank you very much. All right, we're almost out of time. Dr. Emanuel, I want to get back to one national health system issue. There's a Politico article. Trump promised to pay for COVID care, but patients with long-term symptoms see huge bills. Here's the president back in March.
Earlier this week, I met with the leaders of health insurance industry who have agreed to waive all co-payments for coronavirus treatments, extend insurance coverage to these treatments, and to prevent surprise medical billing.
So now Politico says doctors are discovering life-threatening and costly long-term health effects ranging from kidney failure to heart and lung damage, and the federal government is not paying for it. What's the solution? We have 1 minute left.
Well, we need universal coverage, and we also need insurance that's affordable, that doesn't have these sky-high deductibles and co-pays. I think, you know, is that possible? Absolutely, it's possible. Does it require changing our system and new legislation? Absolutely. We make some recommendations. I've been making recommendations. We can get to universal coverage in a lot of different ways. I will say one thing that it now is obvious. It requires getting Medicaid out of the states, because the 14 states that refuse to expand Medicaid mean we have no path now to universal coverage. They've been resistant to, you know, all sorts of blandishments, including, you know, high levels of payment. They represent a third of the population in the United States. We need to stop trying to bribe them and just reorganize the system. We also need to simplify the system. Part of the reason we have high level of uninsurance is we don't have a simple system. Every other country is simpler to get people onto coverage, and we need to do that. They have more or less auto enrollment. If you don't have employer-sponsored insurance, you get this other coverage, and so everyone's got coverage. It's not impossible, and I think we are going to see a huge push after the 2020 election for this, because Americans, I think, have been, you know, they're upset about high drug costs. They're upset about, you know, high insurance costs. I think we are going to see a package of reforms around getting everyone covered and making it more affordable.
Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, University of Pennsylvania, Center for American Progress, host of the Making the Call podcast, and now author of the brand new book, Which Country Has the World's Best Healthcare? Thank you so much. Please come back.
Thank you. Absolutely, Brian. I love the show, and you have the best questions.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.